Good morning. This is Russ Stewart, and this is Inside Navy Supply. We are sitting down today with Captain Tim Ballot, officer in charge of the Naval Petroleum Office, located at the Defense Logistics Agency headquarters in Fort Belvoir, Virginia. Outside, it's a little bit wet and a little bit cold, but inside, it's comfortable, and we are going to be diving into what makes a fuels officer and kind of a lot of different aspects of that. But before we get into the meat of the thing, I just want to say hello to Captain Ballot.
Good morning. How are you doing, Russ?
Doing great. Thanks. I hope you had a good night. And before we get going, we're going to ask a couple icebreaker questions.
Sure.
And we're keeping it nice and light. What was your favorite movie of the last 5 years?
Oh, favorite movie the last 5 years? You know, I think it has to be the new Top Gun movie.
Nice.
Not very often a sequel is as good or better than the original, but I think they hit the mark.
Right. That was a fun movie. I remember, you know, seeing the first one. Mm-hmm. Some of us are old enough to remember that. All right. That's a good one, and it definitely kind of highlights some of the positive aspects of life in the Navy as well. Of course, you can't be acting like you're Maverick all the time, no. Because this is not the movies, of course.
Fuel officer, jet pilot, pretty close.
Right. So the next icebreaker, nice and easy. What is the best piece of advice you have ever received? The best piece of advice.
Interesting. So actually it's from my mother.
Awesome.
And it is, regardless of what's going on in your life, if you're facing challenges, just pick yourself up, give yourself a good talking to, and get to work and solve your problems.
All right. So kind of putting one foot in front of the other.
Exactly.
Return to the fundamentals.
Exactly.
I kind of find that in my work as well. Sometimes we get bogged down in the details, mm-hmm. and things are just kind of swirling around you, and you just kind of focus. Like, wait a second. Am I supposed to be doing right now?
All right. Exactly.
Regardless of all the other distractions. Well, I appreciate that. Those are some a nice opening to our podcast today. So the podcast is regarding fuels, the fuels community. You are a supply corps officer, and the codes or qualifications to do fuels is rarefied air. Would you please describe for us your career in the fuels community so far?
Sure. Actually, it started 1999, so yes, I'm a little old. Started as a fuel intern. We did the internship in FLC Jacksonville, and then after 2 years there, I did my payback at NAS Keflavik in Iceland as the fuel officer. Then I did my second operational tour and did some other things with DOD and with Command and Staff College before I went on to become a regional fuel officer in Europe, Africa, Southwest Asia. It was FLC, Sigonella at the time. Now that has transitioned to the region staff. After that, again, a few other things outside of the fuels community before returning to DLA Energy as the Facility Sustainment Directorate, and then moving from there to this job as the OIC at NPO.
All right. So I heard a couple interesting things in there that I'd like to explore just a little bit further. Earlier, you mentioned the word payback. You did your payback. Right. Can you explain that for us?
Sure. So as a part of having time away to do just the studying, being a fuel intern, which is very cool. It's a great learning opportunity. So it starts with hands-on out in the field, doing everything that the fuelies do, receiving tankers, issuing fuel to barges, to trucks, to go to other locations, moving fuel around the bulk farm. Every facet, it's hands-on. And then there's also some academic side where you're learning about facilities, learning about contracts and other things you would need to do to be a fuel officer. Well, since that's a training position, the payback is that you would go out and be an installation fuel officer, because we need those trained fuel officers out there operating the facilities.
All right. Well, that was very informative. Appreciate that that elaboration on that, the single word. The other thing I'd like to take a little time to explain is you mentioned DLA Energy. Right. So is that just kind of referring to fuels, or is there something more to this, the word energy?
It's primarily fuels. I mean, energy has a wide breadth of responsibilities. Mm-hmm. But from our perspective, we pretty much do focus on fuels to the fleet, fuels for the aircraft. Of course, the same ground fuel. They do other things like aerospace fuel and operational energy for facilities and for bases.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I appreciate that because, you know, sometimes we get used to hearing certain things. We're like, DLA Energy, and you have got this concept in your brain about what DLA Energy all encompasses. But for the layman, the folks who are looking from the outside looking in, you say DLA Energy, and you're thinking, are we charging Teslas? Are we you know, fueling spacecraft? I mean, what are we talking about? Solar, those kind of things. So it's nice to have a cleaner definition of that whole DLA Energy thing.
So energy does encompass the full scope. Mm-hmm. To include when they first procure fuel through contracts, multi-year contracts with refineries for the particular fuel that we, the DOD, use.
Okay. So with that, understanding that you are the OIC for the Naval Petroleum Office, there's some, as any career will illustrate, there's stratification. There's a different responsibilities as, like, you know, your regional, your the guy who's out there, you know, receiving trucks and issuing fuel and those kind of things, if I'm saying that right. I'm probably not.
You're doing good. Yes.
But you're the OIC. So would you be able to describe kind of a typical day here at DLA headquarters?
It does vary by day of the week. Mondays and Fridays aren't heavy days for meetings. So those are good days to take on some of the initiatives. Interact with DLA Energy, interact with the fleet, interact with the other service control points, with the NPO staff on some of our initiatives, some of the problems we're trying to solve, answering the what always comes out is this random email that has no relation to anything that's been taking place before, random questions, but you address those. Mondays and Fridays are good days to do that because there aren't as many meetings. Tuesdays through Thursdays, you typically have some of the staff meetings, whether it's your meeting with DLA Energy, informally or formally, different initiatives, again, because we work with them on a daily basis, very interactive process. Could be meetings within the NAFSUP claimancy that we participate in because we're a part of NAFSUP. But NPO is also transitioning to the CNIC organization as a part of the entire fuels enterprise, fuel operations moving from NASUP to CNIC. NPO will be doing that as well. So we are also participating in CNIC meetings, answering some of their questions, helping formulate CNIC's long-term strategy for fuel support to the fleet and for their facilities and their infrastructure. We also deal regularly with U.S. Transcom, who was just a couple of years ago named as the single point of contact for global bulk fuel management. So this has been an ongoing process where you have entities that aren't used to dealing with bulk fuel. Mm-hmm. So there's some education, but there's also some interactions. And these are positive changes because having a combatant command with this level of oversight or this level of support is good. It's a good opportunity to raise awareness and to have that individual, that command, get into some of the meetings that are important to be in, to influence how we handle fuels within DOD.
All right, thank you. So I'd like to explore that just a hair. So CNIC, or Commander Naval Installations Command, will be assuming responsibility for, and correct me if I'm not in the right swim lane, but they'll be becoming responsible for the equipment, the pipes and the tanks and those kinds of things, or will they even, say, own the fuel itself, so to speak?
So CNIC already owns the infrastructure. They own the bases.
Okay.
The fuel facilities are a part of the base, and so they own the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. NAFSUP has owned the operators and the operation. Mm-hmm. This is a recent change, and so CNIC has assumed responsibility at an IOC, initial operating capability level, late 2024, mm-hmm. right? FOC is our final operating capability is scheduled for no later than 1 October 2025. So now they have the full gamut. They own the infrastructure, they own the operations, and they have sole responsibility for what goes on. Now, they do not own the fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So bulk fuel is actually a DLA Energy, our Defense Working Capital Fund, owned product until it goes to the end user. So the bulk tanks is DLA Energy fuel.
Uh-huh.
When it goes from the bulk tanks into the ship, then it becomes a Navy-owned product.
Okay.
Now, there are exceptions. So the large deck, the MSC tankers, an aircraft carrier, they hold capitalized fuel also. We call it the DLA Energy or Defense Working Capital Fund fuel. We call it capitalized fuel.
Okay.
So they hold that as well, and it doesn't become a Navy product until it's moved into their use tanks or used.
All right. So that is definitely granular, right?
Yes,
we're very, very micro level.
Sorry.
For a macro level, could you explain to our audience that the capital funds and the ownership kind of thing, just kind of like a very simplified version, perhaps?
So, okay, I'll try.
Keep
it simple.
All right. Yeah.
All right. So in order to avoid the starts and stops that come with appropriated funding,
mm-hmm.
DLA Energy is a Defense Working Capital Fund organization. So they can put contracts in place that can go beyond one single year.
Mm-hmm.
While they still do operate on a physical year, having the Defense Working Capital Fund allows them to do things that might not happen otherwise or be more challenging with appropriated dollars.
Okay, so see if I can explain it. Yeah, so that I can understand it. The Congress passes the budget every year, and the Defense Working Capital Fund allows the military to keep doing fuel stuff without having to wait for Congress to pass the budget.
Correct.
Correct?
Correct.
All right. Now, I know that you aren't the decision maker as far as my next question is concerned, but if you were to look into your cloudy crystal ball with the subsequent transfer of responsibilities or operations to Commander Naval Installations Command, what do you see the future of quote-unquote fuelies in the Supply Corps?
I think it's upward trending.
All right.
Because the commander, CNIC, now has the responsibility for the facilities and for the fuel operations.
Mm-hmm.
They want more fuel officers. They want a fuel officer at every installation where they have bulk fuel,
mm-hmm.
or they have fuel operations. So we also do the aviation side. So flight line operations refueling, that also falls under the installation fuel officer. They want to have a regional fuel officer, a more senior officer, more experienced officer, at each region to provide oversight over the installation fuels operations and installation fuel officers. So they are very much interested in that. So a couple of ways we can build fuelies. Well, I mentioned the internship program, which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
The other way is that as a lieutenant selected for graduate school, you can go to the University of Kansas. We have an 811 program there. And once you graduate from that, you would be designated as a fuel officer and go off and do something at that level. You could be a regional fuel officer. You could be a fleet fuel officer, like at 6th Fleet or 7th Fleet.
Mm-hmm.
You could become a joint petroleum officer at one of the combatant commands. All right, so there's couple of pathways.
Mm-hmm.
And the fleet fuel officer, we haven't really talked about that, but the fleet fuel officers play an absolute critical role in helping support the ships that are operating.
Right.
Sometimes in austere locations, identify where they can get fuel, and to make sure that those arrangements are coordinated.
Mm-hmm.
And in some instances, we can't have fuel, U.S.-owned fuel infrastructure around the world. We do, but you can't have it everywhere that you actually need fuel. So there's different methods to get fuel to the ships. The fleet fuel officers would help arrange that. In some instances, NPO would also support. We're always, again, continuous communication within the fuels community so that we're on the same page,
mm-hmm.
and that we're helping each other. And in some instances, a fuel officer would come to us and we would work with DLA Energy for special circumstances, whether it's a C card order, air card order, or if we're going to take advantage of one of our allies and use a fuel exchange agreement to get fuel that way.
Wow. There's a lot of different ways that a fuelie can continue to participate, even with the for lack of a better term, the nominal turnover to scenic. So let me roll back the clock here to 1994. I'm petty officer second class on my first ship, a guided missile frigate, transiting through the Mediterranean, going into the Red Sea, and making a swing around into the Gulf. Would it be a fleet fuels officer that's making my independent steaming frigate making those fuel arrangements, or would that be a regional fuels officer?
That would be a fleet fuel officer. The regional fuel officers, like the installation fuel officers, focus primarily on the infrastructure and the bulk storage areas.
Okay.
So the fleet fuel officers are supporting the fleet,
right,
in their fuel operations in coordination with the CTF staff. Mm-hmm. They're responsible for that area.
The commander task force?
Correct.
Okay.
For logistics.
Right. All right. Earlier, just a minute or two ago, you mentioned 811, right? That sounds like 411 or 811 to me. So what does 811 mean to a Supply Corps officer?
So 811 is the graduate school program, mm-hmm, for fuels officers.
Okay.
810 is a supply officer going to a civilian school, mm-hmm, for their master's degree.
Uh-huh.
811 is a supply officer going to University of Kansas,
okay,
for a fuel related degree.
And does that become like a designator, like an NEC or something like that, a Naval Education Code?
Well, it becomes a subspecialty code. Mm-hmm. 1307 is the subspecialty code for fuels officers.
Okay, 1307, subspecialty code for fuels officers.
So two ways to get it. If you become an intern, you would earn a 1307 in your internship.
Right.
And then when you do your payback tour, then you get an additional annex code to that that indicates that you've done the internship and a payback. When you complete 811, you get 1307,
mm-hmm,
P, as showing that you have the master's degree. When you do a payback after that, you would move to a Q, which means you have the additional training.
So all of these are things that if you're talking to your the supply community manager, calling for orders, those are the kind of things that they're going to consider when they're picking your subsequent commands.
Correct.
And those,
correct,
kinds of things.
So right, for a fuel billet, they're going to look for a 1307.
Okay.
To fill that role.
All right. Man, we're learning so much today about fuels and kind of their importance as far as to somebody's career, and keeping our Navy ready and prepared to operate around the world. I mean, we think about these jobs that are, they're unsung heroes. We think about jobs, or we don't think about jobs like, how does the fuel get to the ship and those kind of things. So if you were to go to places where we grow Supply Corps officers, what would you say to someone who was on the fence about whether or not to go into the fuel specialty rather than maybe some other subspecialty?
Jump in. Very, very simple. I've been doing it since 1999.
Uh-huh.
Had not once have I regretted the choice,
uh-huh,
to make fuels one of my subspecialties. It's a great community. I've mentioned a couple of different ways or several different ways that you have challenges. But what a great opportunity to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And I love doing that. And I think most supply officers do. They love helping the fleet. They love solving problems. They love being able to take action. This is one of the areas that I've absolutely loved, both at the installation fuel officer level, regional fuel officer level, the ability to identify potential problems or a way to do things better,
mm-hmm,
and to move forward and take action. And you're going to find, I have found, and we continue to do this, a lot of support. If you're taking action to solve a problem or make things better, and you ask for support or ask questions, the fuels community, and it is a community,
mm-hmm,
Navy and our Air Force and Army and Marine Corps friends, as well as DLA Energy, which is a mix of military and civilians, will go out of their way to support your initiative.
Yeah, I would expect nothing else. So if I may ask, it's a little personal, how does being a fuels officer impact your career from here?
Well, this is one of two 06 jobs as a fuel officer.
Mm-hmm.
I filled both. Mm-hmm. One was the DLA Energy Facility Sustainment Directorate,
mm-hmm,
and the other is the OIC of NPO. So former FS, we called FS, the Facility Sustainment Director, FSD. So former FSD directors or OICs have gone on to other jobs. There is history that you know, it's a job that you will also make flag from.
Okay.
It's
cross our fingers.
It's not the preeminent, you know, jobs to do that. I mean, that still remains the major commands at FLCs. But it is, there are a history of that. But it also gives you just a wonderful background to go into jobs where, as you mentioned, there's not always a lot of knowledge about fuels, but having that background into the different jobs, into the N4 jobs or command command jobs, or going into the Pentagon, whether OPNET staff or joint staff, mm-hmm. or one of the fleet jobs, just gives you an understanding of an area that not everybody understands. So career-wise, you can go anywhere from
right.
here.
Mm-hmm.
We certainly have folks have moved on to other jobs, ammunition, to some of the fleet, you know, 7th Fleet, 6th Fleet jobs.
Okay. So let's see. Regarding your fuels career and being a Supply Corps officer, what it could be either one, but what has been your favorite billet so far? It could be a fuels billet, it could be a Supply Corps billet. What's been your favorite all around?
That's hard. I love the job I'm in now.
Mm-hmm.
The staff here at NPO is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Just they come to work every day and make a difference.
Nice.
And I get to witness that and participate. When we identify an issue, I will tell you that I will reach out to the staff and seek out their ideas, because we have tremendous experience in the back part of the office. We have tremendous experience. The job I had immediately before this at DLA Energy, again, absolute professionals, both military and civilians, who come to work every day and want to make things better and support the fleet, both the fleet, again, Air Force and Army. But I probably say my favorite job was as the regional field officer when I was in Sigonella.
Nice.
So for Europe, Africa, Southwest Asia, because we were able to identify a need. And I'm going to talk about MILCON, military construction projects, three separate MILCON projects that we submitted to the Installation Planning Review Board, which is run by DLA Energy. It's a joint effort. DLA Energy, Transcom now, and the joint staff lead this board. But you're competing against the other services for MILCON dollars. And we were able to, back, this is early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
Get MILCON funding for infrastructure for additional hydrant pits in Suda Bay, for bulk fuel in Djibouti, mm-hmm. and for additional hydrant system there in Sigonella. What a phenomenal experience.
Mm-hmm.
Again, supporting the fleet, but also seeing a way to make capital improvements to the infrastructure to support the future.
Oh, very good. That sounds very exciting. It was a good, impactful.
Yes.
Billet. Good.
Lasting impact.
Yeah, good tour. All right, so we are just about out of time, and we're going to wrap it up with kind of a toughy question, but it's wide open. What is one thing that you had to learn the hard way?
I think when initially, mm-hmm. and this is probably a personal trait failure, is I'm a hands-on do kind of person.
Okay,
I like to do things myself. I like to take care of myself. I like to solve problems. But as I've mentioned a couple of times, several times, the tremendous support and the tremendous experience that surrounds me now and has in the past. And so I have not always been very good about asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an important lesson in my life, is that one of the first things I will do is, even before I know the full scale of a problem, if something presents itself, I will start asking other people. Because you know what? Most problems aren't new. And it's a very real possibility that the people that are around you or that you reach out to, and when I say reach out, I don't talk about just within your immediate confines.
Mm-hmm.
I will reach out to the fuels community, which includes all services and civilians, and find out if they've faced these type of problems before and how they overcame their problem or how they solved it or how to move forward.
All right.
Again, taking advantage of the experience of others and being willing to do that is probably one of the most important lessons I've learned in life. And as a young lieutenant, I wasn't always the best at doing that.
Now, that's fantastic advice. You know, as the proverb goes, there's much wisdom in many counselors.
Yep.
So, you know, you're not in this Navy team doing things on your own. And as I liked how you mentioned that it wasn't just the people you work with here, but you reach out across DOD and across the divisions between civilian and uniform. So that's fantastic advice. And I think we're going to wrap on that.
All right.
This has been an illuminating session with Captain Tim Ballott at the Naval Petroleum Office. And I hope this has informed and educated you as much as it has me. This has been Russ Stewart for Inside Navy Supply. Over and out.